Welcome to Pigskins and Pageantry, a podcast dedicated to all things SEC football. My name is Wes, and I'd like to invite you to join me, Jesse, and Matt each week as we discuss last week's games, news from around the league, make predictions for the upcoming games, and much, much more. And what's up, everybody? It's Wes. If you're listening or watching, it means that I've been able to gather my big feelings and somehow channel them into show preparation. The sun somehow managed to rise, and the need to earn a paycheck and finish Christmas shopping is enough to make even the saddest fan remember that there's a real world out there that doesn't revolve around the performance of 18 to 22-year-olds on a football field. So one person who isn't disappointed is Jesse, who got two wins this weekend, one Saturday and one on Selection Sunday. How are you, Jesse?
Feeling great. Feeling good. I know there are a lot of people that are big mad. But personally, it was a delightful weekend.
Matt, you're looking a little scared there. What's going on, my friend?
Your Arby's is on fire.
I don't know if you guys can hear me over everything that's going on, but I'm in Tallahassee and everybody is pissed. They're so angry.
And poor Arby's.
And I don't blame them.
Of all the places, Arby's, come on.
They have the meats, and the meats are...
They're a little extra cooked right now, though. Yeah.
Yeah, what are we even doing right now, guys? What are we doing?
I don't know, but we'll... As I say, I think we're going to have some fun talking about it in just a little bit. But first, obviously, we have some something else to talk about that happened last weekend.
Always remember, if you ain't first, you're last.
All right, that clip stings a little bit more than it used to.
Wes is legit the only Georgia fan I feel bad for. He is it. The rest of them, I'm cackling, but hey, I
get it. I understand. The SEC championship between the Georgia Bulldogs and the Alabama Crimson Tide. Bama won this one 27-24. Jesse gets the point. She was the only one to pick Bama because it would have made her feel sick to do otherwise. And that paid off here. So
trust
nice.
Your gut. When your gut feels nauseous, right. Trust it.
Yeah, they say that gut health is the key to most everything. So there you go. So. Mm-hmm. So here's just a quick summary from a dog fan's perspective, and then we'll get into you two can share all the thoughts. So the first quarter started out pretty good from a dog perspective, scoring on a nice sustained first drive seemed to be a good omen as to how things might go. But then we stalled on all the rest of our drives that quarter. On the other side, with Milroe kind of struggling to complete a pass, and Bama started rushing with success, and Georgia's defense kind of didn't adjust to that, allowing big chunk plays on the ground, which eventually opened things up and gave way to a wheel route touchdown by Jam Miller, which probably involved a pick on the defender, but it was so far away from the ball, who's going to notice? And I don't blame them for not noticing. And that's a little nitpick anyway. Then here's where we kind of get to the crux of the issue with play calling. If you've paid attention to any kind of dog fans or message boards or anything like that, there have been a lot of complaints about play calling. And I know a lot of people say that that sounds like an excuse, but if you've been a Georgia fan as long as I have, you'll know what I'm talking about. Because during his previous stint as OC at Georgia, Mike Bobo, much like now, had a plethora of weapons at his disposal on offense, calling plays for guys like Matt Stafford, Aaron Murray, Todd Gurley, A.J. Green, just to name a few. Obviously, big-time NFL players, most of those went on to be. Then Georgia would always have incredible numbers on offense, leading the nation in a bunch of areas, but would always happen when the game was on the line in like crucial third and fourth down situations, it would just call some ridiculous play that the defense would just destroy. And to me, this year's SEC championship was no different. I mean, we had that great first drive, and then we got away from plays that worked. We kind of discarded the quick hits to our playmakers for, runs up the middle. The most egregious to me was the toss sweep on the third down that took forever to develop. And then once again, allowed the defense to destroy it. So, after being creative with play calls all season, all of a sudden, we discard those for predictable plays that the defense can just tee off on. The second quarter was just kind of an embarrassing mix of the play calling I mentioned and then the defensive inability to adjust. And when you do those things against good teams, and this is going to be a theme throughout kind of what I'm saying here, is when you do these kind of things against good teams, which Bama is a good team, they're going to make you pay for it. Add that to the fourth and four completion that probably wasn't, but then wasn't handled properly by the review booth. It was a disastrous end to the half. So, and there's been a whole thing on that too, but the third quarter, the defense stood up much better. I mean, statistically, you could see that things kind of started to shift and the defense was standing up, Bama wasn't able to do what they wanted offensively. But then on the Bulldog side of the ball, kind of more of the same offensively. Largely uneventful, though we did manage to get 3 points in that quarter. But then a costly fumble set Bama up perfectly to take those 3 points right back. So kind of right back at square one. In the fourth quarter, started to make more plays on offense, but the defense just couldn't get the stops in situations where you know what they're going to do, like especially, there at the end, like you know what they're going to try to do, but we just couldn't stop it. And I guess that might speak more to line of scrimmage, and we got beat on both sides of that in this game. And eventually we couldn't stop the clock, and that was all she wrote. So, I'm sure that a lot of Bama fans are screaming during this summary that, Wes, you're not giving Bama any credit. But like I said, I don't really think that's true. How many times have we seen teams get presented a gift but can't cash in, right? To their credit, Bama cashed in on what the Dogs did, and in many cases, what they didn't do. So that's my summary of the game. Now, real quick, I was going to say, I thought the nightmare was over. I thought the Dogs had finally figured out how to look across the field, see Bama helmets, and not soil themselves. But the SEC championship proved that nothing's really changed in that regard. For once, I'd like to see Georgia come out with confidence against them, especially in an SEC championship. But there was just no swagger in this game, really, other than that first drive. It just wasn't there. And we threw away our identity on offense. Real quick, also, Jermaine Burton needs a psychological evaluation. And I'm not even trying to be funny. I'm legitimately concerned about his mental health and those around him, because he has gone off the rails, taunting the Georgia student section after they won the game. There is no Georgia fan that will tell you that we miss his antics. Bama or 100 other teams can have him. We don't need that garbage attitude in the locker room. So I'm going to stop now, because we have more to talk about later, but that's just the game. So, Jesse, let's go to you. Obviously, your take will be, the antithesis in feel of what I've just given here. So,
I'll be a little happier, certainly.
Yeah.
I think after that first drive, I was like, oh, Lord. Oh, no. We're in for it. But it seemed like the Bama team that came out on the field in Atlanta was a team that started to play a full game. It was a team that had coordinators that were calling plays for the players that were on the field and not for players that had played previously. It seems like because we had somewhat of a chip on our shoulder, that kind of propelled us into being successful. I mean, you got to tip your hat to Will Reichert, who is now the leading scorer in NCAA football. I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's a great story.
Incredible. Super proud of him. That's an amazing stat. You know, his first kick gets him breaking the record, and then he just kind of added on to that afterwards. And what a stand-up guy in Will, and somebody that has really carried us for several seasons. So it was awesome to see him get that accolade on such a big stage for those that play in the Southeastern Conference. I will say our offensive line started to look a little bit better. I was really nervous how they were going to do against the defense of Georgia, and they seemed to give Jalen Milroe some of the time that he needed in the pocket, which we haven't seen a lot of, but I think they really took this challenge seriously and were able to kind of hold their ground and make holes when we needed holes. It was very successful for us in getting the run game going. Roydell Williams had several runs that were awesome, and Jace McClellan. So that was something that we've been really itching for, and we finally were able to get that. I think on the opposite side of the ball defensively. That front seven was great. Sack numbers were not, you know, elite, but I think we were able to rattle and get pressure on Carson Beck. And that's something that throughout the season, we've been really pushing for, just wanting to get to the quarterback. And I've never felt like we've gotten full momentum going towards them and really, really rattling them in the pocket. And I think we did. Beck had only been sacked 8 times all season, and Alabama was able to get him down twice, but pressured him several other times. And I think that was a big key difference maker in the game, is he wasn't as comfortable or able to be as comfortable in the pocket as he has been in other games. And, you know, we had some injuries in the game. We had Kool-Aid McKinstry, which is a huge loss for us to come out of the game on defense, but Trey Amos came in and immediately started making plays, which you get nervous when you have people like Kool-Aid McKinstry, Dallas Turner going out, and you have that momentum and you're afraid that maybe the momentum will start to shift to the other side. And they did a really, really great job stepping into very big shoes that if I were somebody in an SEC championship game, those are not the shoes I would want to step in, especially not Kool-Aid McKinstry. but, you know, it was exciting to see that we had some depth there. And then, I mean, Jalen Milroe was confident. He was poised. He made some great runs on his own. He made some really great throws as well and connected well with Isaiah Bond. So I was really pleased with the performance. I know people are going to talk about calls, and that's fine. I think, you know, obviously we're going to see calls on both sides of the ball, and, you know, we're in Georgia, we weren't in Tuscaloosa, but regardless, I know, and we'll get to it when we get to the playoff committees as well. I can confirm that I was not called as an Alabama alumni to join any meeting to donate to a ref fund or a playoff committee fund. Alumni, you know, fees have not gone up, and the text chain of every Bama fan ever did not go off. So I don't know. It wasn't us, but people are going to be big mad regardless. So it doesn't matter to me one way or the other. I will say I felt like we delivered key plays and some really clutch moments that at the beginning of this season, I don't think we could have done. And I don't think we had the poise to do or the confidence to do. And we were able to do that. I think Georgia's offense, or I should say offensive coordinator, certainly made some questionable calls. That trick play is not something I would have called in that situation, and it was not executed properly. That, I'm not an offensive coordinator, so take that with a grain of salt. But sometimes I look at these offensive coordinators and I wonder if they shouldn't pursue other career opportunities and paths as well. Regardless, I think, and it's something I've said all weekend as like the texts have come in on Saturday night and Sunday, this was a hell of a game to watch. This was the last SEC game on CBS. Thank God we don't have Gary Danielson anymore. Everybody can just rest easy knowing
unless
that.
Unless you're going to watch Big Ten game. Oh, well, why would you do that?
That's silly. You're a jokey joke maker. But this was an incredible game to watch as the last game. I know if you're a fan of, you know, Mississippi State or Arkansas or LSU, maybe you don't think that, but this really was two juggernaut programs that were closing out this longstanding relationship that has had weird, wacky, historic plays happen in this time slot on this network. And when we're in an era right now of so many things changing, whether it be teams, broadcast deals, rivalries, whatever you want to talk about, this was a game to watch and one where I felt like very nervous the whole time, even though we kind of came out with the win. So I'm really proud of our ability to play four quarters. And I said last week that in order to beat Georgia, we had to play all four. And we may have let up a little bit in the second half, but we played all four, and that was, I mean, that was it. And I think I've kind of talked about this season as well, that Georgia to me has not played all four a lot. They've started a little slow, and I think that caught up here. And I know the dog fans aren't going to like to hear that, but I think a lot would agree as well. I digress.
Yeah. Matt is someone who hates both teams.
Vehemently. There's nothing but hate, vitriol, and disdain for both of these teams. In fact, I wish I could think of another $4 word that I could use to describe the sheer depth of the just absolute hatred I have for both these teams. But I digress. You know, this was a good game. I think a lot of us in that first quarter watched that opening run by Georgia and were like, this may get out of hand early. You know, if you look back historically at SEC championship games, we've had a couple close ones, but the majority of them seem to kind of hit, okay, one team's going to just completely nuke the whole thing, and the other team's not going to be able to really keep up. And I was worried that's what we were going to get in this game, but obviously that's not the way it panned out. Georgia comes out real bright to start, but then Georgia slows down again. They don't score any points in the second quarter. And Jesse, I think you made a valid point there about how this kind of came back to bite the dogs, no pun intended, to bite the dogs in the rear end a little bit, because, again, they outscored Bama in the second half. They just couldn't get any points in that first half aside from that opening drive. I think Jalen Milroe is in the process of cementing his legacy at Bama. When you look at the amount of people they've had at quarterback, you know, we're a long way away from the A.J. McCarron era of game manager quarterbacks. And Jalen Milroe is just another page in that book, along with the other guys that we've seen play quarterback at Bama. And you know, I watched, when I was watching the tail end of this game, Georgia got it within 3 points right there at the end. And I'm like, Georgia might find a way to get this ball back if the defense can hold. And then Milroe on that very first play rolls off a 30-yard scramble to kind of ice it. And I was like, wow, like that's one, the play call is interesting. I don't know if I'd have been that, excuse the term, ballsy to call a QB keeper on the very first play, because if that blows up, you're immediately giving all the momentum back to Georgia, and they had some momentum late in that fourth quarter. But you know, he pulled off that 30-yard scramble, and you're like, okay, all right, we see you, kid. And I was generally just impressed. It can't be stressed enough, the work, and I hate saying this because I can't stand him. He's the devil. But you know, you have to tip your cap to Nick Saban, and you have to tip your cap to that coaching staff, because when we were week two, week three, looking at Bama, we were like, good God, what is this? Like, they're awful. They don't know who the quarterback is. They can't do anything defensively. They're all over the place. Like, just the fact that they've roared back like they have is very impressive. This is a Bama team that looked very beatable earlier in the season. And going into this game, I mean, they looked like, you know, there was a chance that they wouldn't be able to compete here. But they found a way to win, just like they found a way to win against Auburn, just like they found a way to win against LSU, and just like the way they found a way to win after being down against Tennessee. So, I mean, hats off to them for a big win. And I think this is going to play a huge part into stuff we're going to talk about in just a second with the playoff committee and all that stuff. Yeah, just an excellent game. I was just glad this game was competitive, because I went back and looked at the last couple SEC championship games, and a lot of them have been, you know, 52-28 and 48.
I enjoyed 36. Last year's a lot.
Last year's was a good one, too.
It was not nearly as exciting.
No.
Well, you look at the other conferences games, even this past weekend.
Right.
And it wasn't –
12 was nothing.
Washington, yeah, Oregon, I mean, was kind of Big 10, nothing. But I think you make a really – good point on Saban's coaching this season. I would say this is some of his best, if not his best coaching.
I will concur with that.
Because previously you come in, you have this incredible talent, you have this momentum, you have this solidified identity. Every single position, you know who's playing it. We didn't come into it that way. And we got down early. And we haven't gotten down early in a very long time. And for this team and for this coaching staff to come in, solidify an identity, find leaders, and find heart and grit, And to bounce back when it seemed like week two, everybody was ready to throw in the towel, at least on the fan side. I think that shows a lot of resolve. I think that shows a lot of maturity from the team, because you've got so many people that are telling you you're not the Bama team of past. This, you're losing the dynasty. Saban's done. The quarterback needs to be changed. Hell, throw in a lacrosse player now and put him a quarterback. You know, there's so many naysayers that are trying to tell this team who they are, and they were able to find who they are on their own with excellent coaching, and a coaching staff that was willing halfway through the season to change a playbook to make sure that they weren't trying to cement their own system, but to build a system around what they had. And you don't see that often in coaching staffs.
Yeah. I think the game was almost a microcosm of the season. You kind of stumble out of the gate early, mm-hmm. and then improve, have a solid performance in the middle, and then, you know, finish strong, which they really did. They, when they needed to, you know, get the yards, as you mentioned at the end, to kind of seal it, they did, and were able to do what they needed to do. So very much the way that this whole season has gone. So
if you still have 29 games you've won in a row, this is not the end all. This is not, you know, throw out the baby with the bathwater. Like, you had an excellent
season. Whatever, fire Kirby. There were
a lot of people that were calling for Kirby to get shot out of a cannon on Saturday.
You don't
night.
Need to jump conferences. Joke. You don't need to fire your head coach. It's okay. You won 29 games in a row.
Yeah, you can lose one. It's okay.
I have been there when in the coaches of the past, and I can guarantee you that this is not like the others. So I'm just saying.
You need to say that louder for the people in the back, Wes, because I saw something today that Ohio State fans are calling for Ryan Day's head after he loses to the number one team in the nation. And he's like 1-5 against the top 10 in his career. But like, who are you going to go get? You don't want to go get Jimbo. You ain't going to go get Jimbo. You're going to go just shut up and enjoy it. You can't win the Natty every year. You just can't.
Yes, you can, Matt.
You can't. And I want to know who you're going to get. You give me a name that you want, that's better, and that is willing to coach there. Tell me who you're going to get.
You're not. By the way, I do want to point out here too, is this is something that Jesse, I'm sure it'll make you happy, but it makes me and Wes kind of upset. Jalen Milroe and Isaiah Bond are a nasty combo, and they're sophomores.
I know.
Yeah.
So they're not going anywhere for a minute.
I'm not gonna lie. I really wanted that historic three-peat. Hadn't been done since like the 40s or whatever it was. But you know, two in a row, I'll take it. Right. So
if you had asked me
3 years ago, you know, just one, I was happy with one. I think when the Dogs won that first one, I think my quote was the Kevin from The Office is, it's just nice to win one. That was where we were at. So yeah, you're right. All things considered, I can't complain. So, shall we summarize? Well, not summarize, but just go through these other championship Saturday games for the Power Five teams. Not that they matter, and they
as
will
of this, Sunday.
This will come into
stuff. Don't
as I say, this would factor in later, but. In some instances, not so much. Pac-12 championship game between Oregon and Washington. Washington won this one 34-31. Jesse got the point here as well. Only one to pick Washington. And so this one was an exciting one as well. About the only other one of the weekend of you know, the teams in the Power Five conferences, I guess. That was pretty exciting towards the end.
I was about to say, Wes, you better put some respect on that Toledo game.
Definitely not.
Or the Mac.
Not taking anything away from them, for sure. do we want to talk about any of these or just give the scores? Because, I watched these, but, you know, I don't have a whole lot of strong thoughts on them.
I don't think anybody listening really cares either way.
Yeah, you're probably correct. Then the Big 12 championship between Oklahoma State and Texas. Texas rolled here 49-21. I got the point here. Not even close.
I do want to point out that yes. Not only did Texas win this game, but the MVP got a championship belt from the Undertaker from the WWE. So that was chef's kiss. Very well done.
So a little bit of foreshadowing here. So Texas was referred to as SEC light since they will be in the SEC next year. So I was fully prepared. Fully prepared to continue this show with only Texas being in the top four, but we'll talk more about that later. The next one, Big Ten championship between Michigan and Iowa. Michigan won 26-0 here. Jesse and I both had the same differential. I got the point in the end. Yeah, yeah. And I left our scores in there. You can see where Jesse put cheaters for Michigan as well. So it's just, you know, nothing's really changed. It's all the same. It's just a different week. So
have y'all seen the commercial for the avocados from Mexico?
Avocado from Mexico.
But now in my brain, I just heard cheaters from Michigan.
Because if you say it in a jingle, it's okay, right?
It's completely fine.
Much more palatable.
I don't have to worry about old khaki pants like suing me for slander or libel or whichever.
He's got time to do it. He's not coaching.
That's true.
Oh, no, but, he's back. He's back in saddle.
But how many games did he actually coach this year is my question. I don't even remember.
Highest paid man in the country.
Yeah.
After Jimbo.
Especially when you factor in, you know, per game, right? So, all right. And then finally, ACC championship between Louisville and Florida State. Florida State took care of their business here, won 16-6. Matt got the point.
But it didn't matter.
But it didn't matter. Current pick'em standings, we've kind of squished everything together a little bit here. I've got 48, Matt has 38, Jesse has 30. So a little bit of changes going there, and obviously more to come, and then more weighted scores to come as well. So, all right, well, we've come to it. Let's get to the news.
Here's the news.
All right, the final CFP rankings, as were announced Sunday afternoon. Number one, no surprise, sliding up, Michigan. Number two, Washington. Number three, Texas. And then when I tell you that the look of shock on everyone's face when that Alabama at number four flashed up, for a second there, I was like, wait, are they putting them at five? Because, you know, when they flash it on the screen, it's like this big thing on the screen. You can't tell where it's going to be, and then it went at four, and I was like, what? Leaving Florida State at number five, Georgia number six, Ohio State seven, Oregon eight, Mizzou nine, Penn State 10, and then the SEC teams rounding out the rest of them. Ole Miss at 11, LSU at 13, and Tennessee at 21. All right, here we have come to it. What do we think? Matt, let's start with you first. What do you think about these final CFP rankings?
All right. First off, I want to establish for the record that it's nice to actually get the rankings that matter, as opposed to the, you know, 18, 19 other weeks of rankings that meant absolutely bupkis, which is a Yiddish word. Shout out to my buddy Michael for teaching me that. Second off, have zero issue with Michigan being up there until eventually we find out that they cheated, and then they're going to have to get rid of everything that happens after this point. But we'll get to that later when it comes up, because again, they're cheaters from Michigan. It's going to happen. Washington, I think, deserves to be at number two. They beat Oregon twice. Oregon's, you know, top 10 team. Not mad at that at all. Texas at three makes sense. You know, Texas finished strong. Looked pretty good in their game. Definitely got the eye candy. I don't agree at all with Bama being at four. I think this is not only a miscarriage of justice, I think this is an affront to the entire game of football, not just college. Because we hang everything that we have, and I'm going to pontificate for a second if you allow me to. We hang everything that we have about this sport that we love and spend way too much time getting our blood pressure up about. We spend all of our time saying it doesn't matter what the stats say, it doesn't matter what the records say, it doesn't matter what the polls say, doesn't matter what the talking heads on ESPN, ABC, NBC, it doesn't matter what they say, we can settle it all on the field. What the committee has shown here by putting Bama at four and putting FSU at five is that none of that mattered. FSU did everything they could. Every single thing they had to do to get into a championship playoff, they did. The committee said, sorry, not good enough. You're just going to have to settle for an Orange Bowl bid and call it a day. And I feel like, and this is in no way, shape, or form intended to be degrading or disrespectful to Alabama. Alabama is a championship caliber team. No, I'm not making any qualms about that. However, Alabama stumbled out of the gate against Texas, lost at home, lost by, I think, 10 points, two scores at least. And I feel like, you know, Bama had their struggles. You had another Hail Mary attempt at Jordan Hare in order to get a win over Auburn. I wasn't shocked by this at all, but I feel like what you've done is you've taken the last gasp of this four-game playoff and you've completely just fouled it all up. I don't know what the committee's thinking. I know that they probably tried to justify it because Bama has a higher strength of schedule. But when you look at strength of record, when you look at the out-of-conference record, FSU comes up stronger. If FSU's quarterback doesn't break his leg in week 9, then this isn't an issue FSU's at 4. But they're allowing that one instance plus the pedigree of the SEC over the last 25, 30 years to impact this decision. And I didn't agree with it. And I wasn't, I wasn't shocked by it at all. I was actually anticipating Bama to be at 4. It was not surprising to me in the least. However, I will tell you that I think it is wrong. It is what it is, but we don't have to be happy about it. And when you've seen the outcry that has come not only from the people in Tallahassee, but from everybody else in every other conference, it makes sense why the other conferences hate the SEC, because this is the kind of preferential treatment that the SEC gets that they shouldn't get.
Yeah.
End rant.
Okay. No, I appreciate your perspective. Jesse, let's move to you. What do you got?
I'll start by saying I don't think that there was a right answer. I truly don't. That's fair. When we looked at the end of the night on Saturday and we saw where we all netted out, there was no right answer. You could look at 1 through 7 and say everybody has an argument as to why they should be there, why they deserve to be there, and what they did to get there. And it all makes sense. Everybody's argument is valid. Their feelings are right. And they probably should be there. And if we had the extended playoff this year, it'd be no issue. We'd be A-okay. And this is just further evidence as to why that is going to work better in the future than 4, because we truly have 8 teams, at least 7, if not 8 teams that I'm looking at that could be contenders for a national championship, or at least deserve the chance to
a chance to
throw it out there. My qualm is Michigan. It's like you said, we know the cheating happened. It's not a question of like, did they cheat? We know they stole signs. It's there.
Which technically isn't illegal though, Jesse.
The way they did it was illegal.
It's wrong. They don't deserve to be there to me. They're taking the chance away from a team that didn't do questionable things to get there. And I'm not saying that that's on the players. Absolutely not. But unfortunately, the coaches and the coaching staff and the adults in the room, they are the ones that ruin it for everybody, that ruin it for the kids. Right. And they're the ones that have to be held accountable. And how do you hold them accountable? You take away their ability to play for a championship. That's my opinion. I have an issue with Michigan being there. Because then, say they win, this all means nothing. And that's just really frustrating. Yeah. Washington, yeah, I'm excited to see that. I think that's exciting for them, knowing that their conference is now bye-bye. Maybe they can win one for a conference that's now going to be obsolete.
There's two teams in the top 4 that are leaving their conferences for greener pastures next year.
Yep. Texas, I get it. I mean, I do. I think it's interesting to me, like, obviously, Texas beat Alabama, of course. But I'm saying, like, everyone's frustrated that Alabama took a spot away from FSU. But would you have wanted FSU? Why not FSU at three? Like, everyone's like, FSU should have been four. Why shouldn't they be three? I'm just not seeing the argument of like Texas versus FSU. I'm not saying it's not valid against Bama. It is. But I think it's interesting that you're not seeing that as much. Alabama. Obviously, everyone's up in arms. I get it. I get the frustration. I certainly get it if you're a Georgia Bulldog. I certainly get it because you have an undefeated regular season. And for teams that don't go and play in their conference championship, you know,
it's a punishment.
Yeah, it's a punishment, right? And for Alabama, it was a benefit. And for Georgia, it was a punishment. I get why you're mad. I hear you. And you have every right to be pissed off. You did not benefit from that. To the naysayers about Alabama, I hear you. Obviously, I am thrilled we're there. I'm biased. I'll be the first to tell you that. I don't hide that fact. We took off the number one team in the nation that was on a 29 game winning streak. That's got to count for something. Again, it's in a conference championship. I understand that it punished them and it benefited us. I'm just saying. Again, FSU, that sucks. That sucks. I hear you. You're continuing the Florida It Sucks song that UCF started singing years ago. Get it. And that's not great. I think based on what I've read, the committee's reasoning for this was they wanted the best four teams in the country and they wanted the best football that they thought possible. Now, I don't know that some of the best football possible doesn't also lie with UGA being there. I don't know. It's tough. And I am really glad I was not on the committee and had to make this decision because I could have been convinced seven ways to Sunday on a lot of these teams. And there just wasn't enough spots. At the end of the day, this is the last time anyone's going to have to deal with it until
we hope.
Next year. We hope.
Going to be arguing about number 12, hopefully not quite as, big of an argument, but you never know.
Cause now the new argument's going to be, well, who should get a first round bye going forward? Who should be at four? Who should be at five? But again, I guess it won't matter quite as much as, hey, you don't even get a chance to play for a national championship. You have to settle for an Orange Bowl bid against a team who's probably going to stomp your guts out.
Yeah. Maybe. I mean, and that's, I guess that's the thing. I'm honestly looking at, and if you want to get conspiratorial, we can. You've got a team from every portion of the country playing in these games.
It's almost like TV plays into it, huh?
So, and again, I'm not saying that has anything to deal with it, but
I'll say it.
You are getting some, if not the best, of the teams across the country playing for this. Again, I'm not saying someone deserves to be there more than the others. Unfortunately, we hit a time in football. There were a lot of good programs. And we got to watch a lot of really good football. And the unfortunate, side of that, the double-edged sword of that is not everyone gets to go to a national championship. And, Bama could get there and we could get our brain smashed in, right? I don't know, but I think my issue is going to remain with Michigan.
Yeah. Michigan didn't look too happy to find out they were playing Bama in the first round.
They did not. Did you notice that?
Interesting
reaction.
Did you see that reaction? They were like, oh God. So
it was like it was like an initial reaction of oh no, and then it was like they realized cameras were on them, so they're like, yeah,
that was funny.
Good answer.
I wonder how old Khaki Pants is gonna. That's good, but that'll be a good game. Hopefully, they don't play it on New Year's Eve or whenever they. Remember last year when they were playing crap on
New Year's Day.
Is it New Year's Day this year? Okay.
Yeah, New Year's Day at
people want to go out and have beers and hang out with their buddies on New Year's Eve. Don't do that.
Yeah. I think, it's been a good run for the committee. But now everything will be decided by ChatGPT. So
don't give them ideas.
That, That's a shout out to my buddy Andy. That's his joke. And we were talking about it this weekend. But anyway, yeah, I mean, my only thing is, if you thought FSU wasn't deserving, like, why put them at number four last week? Nothing's changed in terms of your star quarterback being out. The committee put them there even without Jordan Travis, and they did everything that was asked of them. As
and they went 3-0 without their starting quarterback. Like, they beat good teams and without their starting quarterback.
And last week with the third string. So
it's mind numbing.
Granted, this is my opinion, but the committee has made themselves out to be a joke, mainly because they put their inconsistency on display. Mm-hmm. First, there's the inconsistency of their evaluation of FSU and just this season. But then, as my buddy Jason brought up, last year, they put TCU in, not because they were the best team, but because they were the most deserving based on the games that they had played. They did what they needed to do on the field, and that's why they got there. This year, they flipped the script. This year, FSU deserved that fourth spot based on that, and they themselves had put into place. So then they pulled the rug out from under them and gave it to a team that was number eight going into the final week. Now, here's something that's fun. The committee had never before left an undefeated Power Five team out of the playoff. They had never before dropped the number one team out of the top four. And they had never before selected a team ranked outside the top six. And they did all three on Sunday. So that's
Bama money. Nick called in some favors.
Look, at the end of the day, I'm not mad at it because, we're an SEC football podcast. And it gives us more to talk about. So I'm not mad about it. But I just know, I don't know how the committee can honestly look at themselves in the mirror and think that they did a good job over the past couple weeks of rankings. Like, I get whiplash trying to figure out all the things that they've set us up for only to change the rules of evaluation later on.
I think that TCU point, it probably weighed into it. I think there was a lot of backlash mm-hmm. last year of like, you guys did this.
But they won every game. Like, how you're not going to know how they're going to stack up and still make one.
They beat Michigan in the semifinal. So it didn't look that bad until they got to the final game.
So, and they played a nasty Georgia team, which is what's to be expected. The other thing that nobody's really talking about with this that we kind of touched on a second ago is this issue with Michigan. Mm-hmm. Like, what is this going to look like if it comes out that there are major league problems with this Michigan thing and all of this stuff's been a moot point? Like, it just,
either asterisk or I guess whoever's number two would be the current champion, I guess. See,
and that's why I'm so upset with them being there. I get innocent until proven guilty. We know things are happening, whether or not somebody knew about it or whatever. But to take away a spot that is well-deserved by other teams.
Yeah.
For a team that could potentially, and perhaps more than likely, have all of this taken away is so frustrating and probably makes FSU more pissed off than they already are. Mm-hmm.
They should have done something about it a long time ago, because we've gone down the path far enough. There ain't no turning back now. It's like we can't do anything about it now in the season. We just got to ride this thing out. But
I mean, it's almost like they're like, well, let's just like hold on to after the season, and then just let them play this thing, because like, how fun would it be? We can't leave a Big Ten team out. It's like, come on.
Yeah,
it's really funny how the Big Ten kind of swept all this under the rug too. They kind of said, oh yeah, we did an investigation,
that's nothing new,
and then they true, but you would hope they'd have a little bit more integrity in that. I say that as somebody who's involved with Greg Sankey in the SEC. So
now we talked about,
again, we go into broadcast contracts. You've got a league, an organization that's looking at big broadcast money. We did an investigation. It's fine. No, it's cool. It's cool. It's cool. It's cool. Let's get all this signed. Let's get into a playoff and let's help get more money. Yeah. And then we'll figure it out.
Right. Now, we talked about Georgia a little bit earlier. I'm not here to say that Georgia deserved to get in, because I think the way that things fell, I didn't think that was going to, that didn't even enter my mind on Sunday that they might slip in. But if we want to use the logic of best teams, Georgia had been the undisputed number one team in the nation to that point. I say undisputed in recent weeks. Obviously, there was a whole thing with them in Michigan for a little bit. But they had beaten three top 20 teams by double digits in the last 4 weeks of the season and lost by measly 3 points to a very good Bama team. So it's like, can anyone honestly say that Georgia isn't better than the other top three teams up there? Again, I'm not here to say that Georgia should be in because we got beat. Like, I that's fair, I think. But the argument that is being used by the committee isn't most deserving, it's best. In the end, they've just ended up talking out of both sides of their mouths. And you can't tell me that they really care about putting the best four teams in because of that.
Do you think Georgia is a better team in a top four than Texas?
Than Texas? I don't know that I would pick Texas out of those. I think they're better than Michigan and Washington. I don't know that I would say they're better than Texas. To me, that's iffy because we've seen this Texas team do good things this year. Obviously, they've had a few struggles. But if I were to pick any of the top four, I wouldn't say Texas and Bama. I would lean more towards Washington and Michigan that I say that they're better than. If we're just looking at better. But, again, like I said, I didn't really expect that. But So I'm telling you right now, because Bama has managed to get in, they might as well go ahead and start printing up championship number 19 shirts, hats, and other stuff.
They're battle hardened now. They're ready for it.
Yeah. I mean, a few weeks ago, Michigan didn't even know what a forward pass was, right? And Washington's not going to be able to hang with them. And they will absolutely beat Texas in a rematch because this is not the same team that played them near the beginning of the season.
I don't know.
I would be nervous with the rematch. I would be nervous
Texas should have beat them last year, and they had them this year, and they did that at home against Bama on a neutral site.
We have the two factors there.
Same team, though.
Yeah, it's two factors true. There. It's hard to beat a good team twice in the same season, and then on Washington top of that. Did it. Exactly. I mean, that's kind of rare, though. But then on top of that, Bama is much better than they were earlier in the season. So you heard it here first. Well, maybe not first, but you heard it here. Bama wins it all, which means
that's your pick. You're going to go ahead and call Bama to win.
Georgia fan, we're headed back to a very dark place in college football that I thought we'd left. So I'm not talking about you, Jesse, or any other Bama fans in my close circle, obviously.
Hold on, man.
But Saban era has brought forth a generation of Bama fans who do not know what it's like to lose. I don't mean losing seasons are rare. I mean losing one or two games a season is rare. And that's really given birth to an entitled breed of fan that thinks their team should win just by stepping onto the field. Now, the last couple of years have been kind of quelled by that, a little bit, what's happened on the field. But now it's just going to be back in full force. And living in a military town, because it feels like I'm the visitor when I hear all the roll tide around town here. Again, not talking about family members. Obviously, they get a pass, and obviously, they're respectful. Jesse, you're very respectful always. Outside of that, if you think I'm talking about you, I probably am. The entitled Bama fans need to be humbled, but it won't happen this year. I'm just telling you, it's not going to happen this year. I'm picking Bama already, and I'm done.
Wes,
I'm done.
This is completely okay, though, because here's what's going to happen. They're going to beat Michigan. They're going to get Texas in a rematch. They're going to beat Texas. They're going to win an
exactly.
Yeah. And then what's going to happen is a beautiful thing. Nick is going to announce the day after that he's stepping down as the head coach of the University of Alabama.
I see where you're going already. Yep.
He will name his successor, a Mr. Lane Kiffin, that is currently the head coach at Ole Miss. And then we will be done with the Bama domination series for at least another 10 or 15 years, hopefully.
Yeah.
I mean.
Listen, he just bought that house for Miss Terry in Jupiter, Florida. And you can't tell me that he bought that place and he's going to pay taxes on it. He's going to pay upkeep on it. He's going to pay the mortgage on it. You can't tell me he just bought that thing and said, we'll come move here in like 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
Not going to happen. You think he paid cash for that? Oh, that's a good point.
Well, probably. It's possible.
Probs.
I think as an SEC fan, though, if you look at, as a conference fan, if you look at these rankings, you see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 6.5. We'll say 6.5 because Texas will be there next year. You have six, say seven teams, right there that are in the top 25. It's going to be a hell of a season next year.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
I mean, holy cow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's going to be wild for sure. Is this a good point to get into the transfer portal?
Let's
madness.
Do it.
I just put a couple on here that were more notable names. If you all, and I'm sure more have come out since we even just talked last.
It's hourly.
Yeah. As I say, Ohio State quarterback Kyle McCord, Oklahoma quarterback Dylan Gabriel, and Georgia's backup Brock Vandegrift have all entered the transfer portal. And then Alabama backup quarterback Tyler Buckner has entered the lacrosse transfer portal. That's a thing. That's a real thing. So,
my favorite meme I saw today is after Tyler Buckner declared for the lacrosse transfer portal. We're not joking. That wasn't us trying to be funny. That's actually,
I thought it was a joke when I saw it the first time. I was like, this is a meme.
Factual. My favorite meme was Alabama played a lacrosse player in week three and still made it to, to a playoff.
It did happen.
It did. I wish him all the best in lacrosse. I truly do. I genuinely don't know that quarterback is the position for him. So I think lacrosse is a great move. And Alabama does not have a lacrosse program. So go chase your dreams, boo.
Yeah.
You do you.
I'm just trying to figure out where all these quarterbacks are going. Like, why are you – what are y'all doing? Like, I understand that there's NIL money on the line. I understand there's the chance to go, you know, upgrade your program a little bit. But, like, the cat at Oklahoma and Ohio State, where are you going?
Mississippi State.
You think the NIL money is at Mississippi State's better than Ohio State?
I think what happened with Ohio State, I think Kyle McCord, because Ryan Day was not committing to McCord last week, he straight up did not commit to Ohio State. I think if he's sweet talked by the right coach and told he will start and he's a leader on the team. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a quarterback. His ego was hurt.
Y'all watch Dylan Gabriel's about to pull Spencer Rattler and end up at South Carolina.
There's so many more players every year going into the portal. And it seems like the percentage of players who find a home is less and less every year.
How old is Jackson Dart? What year is Dart?
Dart, he's got to be, oh gosh, I don't know.
He junior? Might be done.
Is he a junior maybe?
Just know Lane loves the transfer portal, so I'm just trying to see where one of these gentlemen will fit in at Ole Miss.
Right. Well, yeah.
Jane Daniels going straight to the draft.
Oh, yeah. His stock's too high. Somebody can
go to LSU.
Jackson Dart's a junior.
Okay. Somebody can go to LSU. Brock Vandegrift, I'm sure, would fit in just nicely at LSU. Florida.
Or Oregon.
That's right. Bo Nix is going to be out. He's way past his first.
He's on like his seventh year of eligibility.
Seriously.
Him and Hunter Renfro need to hang out. They probably could compare notes of what the war
and
was
Stetson
like.
Bennett.
And Stetson Bennett.
Stetson's got his own things to deal with right now.
Well, yeah. Maybe hang out in a more controlled environment.
Yeah. That sounds
That's the thing. There are always transfers and there are always those declaring for the draft or for lacrosse. So you will find a spot.
Yeah.
Inevitably. What was who was it that transferred like four times? He was at UGA, right?
Wait.
Jaden? McDaniels?
Oh, were you talking about JT Daniels?
JT Daniels, yes.
Now, have you seen he's officially retiring from football? He's concussion
medically
stuff.
Retired.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's good. He went to what, four schools?
I think so. Rice, most recently UGA, at Rice, I think. USC was where he started.
USC.
And he went to
West Virginia, right?
West Virginia.
Yeah.
He did the tour de force.
Yeah. I mean, that is literally the tour of the country right there.
I wonder if he actually got a degree. Like all that transferring, especially different states.
Your credits
transfer. You had to lose some credits somewhere.
Yeah. Gosh, I don't know.
More power to him.
And also today, just a few hours ago, they announced the four Heisman finalists. So Matt is out. He's officially checked out of the show.
The dumbest, stupidest piece of hardware.
But the Nissan Heisman House is really fun.
It is
no, it's
fun.
Not. It's lame.
Yes, commercials go.
It's stupid. I don't want another excuse to have to stare at Tim Tebow looking all chiseled jaw, perfect, whatever. There's a reason why I don't watch. There's a reason why I don't watch SEC Network's pregame stuff because Tebow's on it, and I would rather drink liquid razor blades than listen to Tim Tebow talk. I would. Yeah.
Liquid razor blades probably wouldn't hurt as much, right?
That's right. Bryce
Young
the
is really funny on camera. He does well in commercials. Fun to watch.
I thought you just hated Paul. That's, you know, I didn't know.
I have nothing against Paul. You know, Paul's a Tennessee grad.
That's true. That's a good point.
I have nothing against Paul. I do have something while we're talking about grinding axes. The fella with the really thick southern accent that looks like he should be in like Rascal Flatts or something. Yes, that guy. Something about him to talk about. I don't like him. I don't know why.
Well, we
if
all
he's
know
watching this, I'm sorry.
I don't like Jordan Rodgers.
You're still higher than Drinky. Yeah. You got that going for you.
That's right.
Did you see what that freaking nerd said on live TV in front of God and everybody when he was
I
on?
I thought it was hilarious, to be honest.
You're enabling him.
And I don't like Drinky, but I thought that was great comedic timing. It was hilarious, especially since they're playing Ohio State.
Matt, tell the people what you're talking about.
So they were interviewing Drinky because his team finished 10-2 because they've sacrificed a goat to the devil. I don't know. But and then at the end of the interview, he's like, "Hi guys, I gotta go. Connor Stallions is calling me. I gotta take this call. Okay, what's up, Connor?" Like, it's just trying too hard. And you're talking to the guy that tries too hard to be funny all the time. I'm a high school teacher. That's what I do. Yeah. But he's just everything he
I don't like the guy. I just thought that moment was well timed. So, and even Reese Davis lost it on TV.
Reese did laugh pretty hard at it. I'll give that.
And it's hard. It's hard to make him break. So,
all the Missouri fans are cussing me out in the comments right now.
I think the Missouri fans agree. I think they're also embarrassed by it.
Probably a little bit. Yeah. Of course, I guess if you're in his shoes, what do you got to lose, right? You might as well just have fun with it. This is not where you expected to be.
He's riding the lightning bolt right now. Yeah. Might as well double down and just have a good time.
Exactly. The four Heisman finalists of the award that doesn't matter. Jaden Daniels from LSU, Marvin Harrison Jr. from Ohio State, Bo Nix, Oregon, and Michael Penix Jr. from Washington. So I don't really know. I think I'm kind of leaning a little bit more towards Jaden Daniels. What do y'all think?
Jaden Daniels has my vote. I mean, I think there's certainly a case for Bo Nix. His numbers since leaving Auburn are amazing. Michael Penix Jr., again, another standout, amazing numbers and really crucial to his team. Maybe it's my SEC bias, but I truly think that Jaden Daniels is that difference maker for his team.
Can beat you with his arms or his leg. So
he really can. He's an incredible athlete. Not that the others are not, but my goodness, that guy is lights out, and he would have my vote if I were having a Heisman vote.
Matt, I know it doesn't matter, but
it doesn't matter. It's a stupid piece of hardware that the New York Athletic Club gives out every year because it's stupid.
I will say one thing about the Heisman or a former Heisman winner. This weekend after the Bama game, we watched the Bye Bye Barry documentary about Barry Sanders on
Prime. I didn't watch it, but
not watched it, I highly recommend watching it. It was incredibly done. As someone who was born in 93, I just wasn't in the Barry Sanders.
You didn't see him. Oh my God, he's so good.
So I know the name. I know who Barry Sanders is, you know? And so to see all these highlights and to just see how humble of a person he is, how quiet he is, and to see him run was amazing. Absolutely amazing. Go watch it. It's got Eminem in it, which is really funny. It's got Jeff Daniels and Tim Allen in it, and like other sports people as well, but those are like some celebs that you'll see in there. And it was done just incredibly, incredibly well, and goes into the reasons that he decided to retire from professional football.
So I don't know those reasons. I'll have to look
it
up.
It's a good one. It's a good one. It's not too long. Watch it on Prime.
And the Lions were so terrible. But every time he touched the ball, you had to stop and watch because never knew.
He was a nightmare for linebackers. I know that. There was a time I watched him play. I think it was they played Chicago.
The Thanksgiving Day game?
I think so. And yeah. I remember sitting in front of my TV on the floor because I was like 5 or 6, 7 or 8, however old it was, and just watching him and going, how is a human able to do any of that? That dude has to be Superman. Like, there's no, where's his cape? It's got to be there somewhere.
The whole defense looked silly. I think he juked the same guy like 2 or 3 times in the same play.
He's shifty. Real shifty. Going back to the Heisman, if I had to go ahead and throw one out there, I think I'm going to have to, and again, we're all biased because we're SEC people. I think Jaden Daniels has probably made the best case here. His numbers are better than Joe Burrow's when Joe Burrow won it, 3 years ago?
Yeah.
So I don't know how you don't give it to Jaden Daniels. I bet, and it's just, it's something. By the way, fun little fact for you. Michael Penix grew up a Tennessee fan. Did y'all know that?
I didn't know that.
He was also recruited by Tennessee and was going to sign at Tennessee when Jeremy Pruitt told him, thanks, but no thanks.
Oh, gosh.
So that happened. It's a great 15
years. I think the interesting stat to look at when you compare these, I'm going to say just the quarterbacks for right now. You look at the fact that Jaden Daniels, you have to put impressive numbers for passing and rushing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah.
For the other two, you're just putting passing yards, passing completion, passing TDs. You're putting both in the thousands.
Yeah.
For the quarterback.
It's unbelievable.
I wonder how those numbers stack up against like Tua or who's Jaylen?
Jalen Hurts, Bryce Young.
Yes, that guy, excuse me. I hope I muted that because that was really loud. Good. Yeah, there'll probably be another one along shortly. I'd be curious to see what those stats look like because Jaden kind of plays that same sort of system, which Milrow also plays, much to Wes's chagrin.
Yeah. Well, so obviously the positions are set in terms of rankings. So the bowl games are also set. So let's just look at those real quick. We won't do those this episode. We'll do that maybe next week. But the list of bowl games for SEC teams, you have Texas A&M versus Oklahoma State in the Tax Act Texas Bowl. You've got Clemson versus Kentucky in the Tax Slayer Gator Bowl. And then
that's going to be an interesting matchup. I'm very curious to see how that game's going to stack up.
Yeah. And as we just mentioned, the Missouri versus Ohio State in the Goodyear Cotton Bowl Classic and New Year's Six Bowl.
So I have a bad feeling about that one.
Yeah.
Ole Miss versus Penn State in the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl.
I'm very interested in that game.
Yeah. That's, I like that matchup. And then Auburn versus Maryland, in the Transperfect Music City Bowl. And then Georgia versus Florida State in the Capital One Georgia Orange Bowl.
Wes, you sound so disappointed. And then Georgia versus.
Did y'all see the Zoom with Mike Norvell and Kirby Smart for this one? You want to talk about two guys who do not want to be on this call?
Not at all. It was bad. Like they did not hide how they were feeling at all, especially Mike Norvell. And Mike Norvell at least has an axe to grind on that score. But man,
for sure. So that'll be interesting to watch. I'm also curious to see how many of these games we have players sitting out and who sits out. I am curious about that.
Somebody just announced a while ago before we came on the air that they were sitting out. Let me see if I can find who it was.
Williams at USC, right?
Yeah, that's who it was. Yeah.
Honestly, I'm not surprised. Again, I understand why they sit out. I truly do. If it's very frustrating as well.
Too.
I see both sides. But Williams, if you've watched him and how he is on the sidelines, I'm not sold. He kind of isolates himself on the sidelines. He doesn't talk to other players when things go wrong. He's very interesting. And again, I can't hear what he's saying, but for him to sit out, I would have I would have picked that as
he's in a Dr. Pepper Fansville commercial as well. So about superstition, oddly enough. So let's see who's next. Wisconsin versus LSU in the ReliaQuest Bowl. Iowa versus Tennessee, Matt, and in the Cheez-It Citrus Bowl.
That game's going to be like a 7-3 final score. It's going to be bad.
And then, of course, the CFP semifinal, Alabama versus Michigan at the Rose Bowl. And as you mentioned, that'll be New Year's Day. So we have actually, to me, noticeably fewer games this year, as we've mentioned last week, guys, you know, teams not making, you know, getting the bowl games. So, yeah, there's a few missing. I know last year, I think we had Arkansas. Gosh, who else?
Florida made a bowl game last year. South Carolina made a bowl.
South Carolina, yeah. So, yeah, we've got quite a few missing. So,
did Mississippi State make a bowl last year?
Yeah, they did because they won it.
Yeah.
They won the last second.
That's right. And
that was part of the reason why they ended up going, well, what's his name for the head coach? Because they won that bowl game.
Right.
Yeah, I think. We're missing all of those.
Right. So yeah. Anyway, we'll talk about.
Oh, and Vanderbilt. Sorry, and Vanderbilt.
Yeah, yeah. Vanderbilt didn't make one last year, did they?
No, but I was mentioning teams we're not from SEC were missing.
Sure, right. We're not comparing. We're just saying who's missing. Yeah, I got you. Yeah.
Poor Vanderbilt.
One day, one of these days. So. All right. Well, we can talk about those next time. Looking forward to kind of getting into some of those matchups. As we mentioned, a few really intriguing ones. Yeah, so we really appreciate y'all listening to our SEC championship recap plus all of the other madness that occurred over the weekend. If you'd like to contact us, please email us at pigskinsandpeasantry@gmail.com or at pigskinsandpeasantry on TikTok, Instagram, and Facebook. And on X, we are at PPSEC Podcast. Don't forget, we're available for download on iTunes, Spotify, Amazon Music, TuneIn Radio, and most podcasting apps for iPhone, Android, and other operating systems. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe and review. We'd love 5 stars to boost our visibility and have more great conversations with wonderful people like yourselves. Until next time, you know, I'm a little bit sad, but I'm still going to say, go Dawgs.
I understand a lot of people have really big feelings, and it's okay, and you should feel those feelings fully. But at the end of the day, Roll Tide.
Oh my God, that made my heart. Ah, I woke up feeling the cheesiest, coach. Go Balls.